HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to Mint. I am Nasreen Sultana. I am an assistant editor at Mint. I keep a close track of all that is happening in the world of stock markets. You are listening to All Things Markets, where I speak to experts analyzing the big trends moving the stock markets.
Sustainable funds showed resilience during the COVID-19 pandemic market sell-off. Driven by growing investor interest in environmental, social, and governance issues, the global sustainable fund universe pulled in around $45.6 billion in the first quarter of 2020. The last 3 years have seen a steady increase in assets in sustainable funds. Assets remain dominated by Europe, however, accounting for over 80% of the global sustainable fund universe. Currently, with many funds now formally considering ESG factors in a non-constraining way to mitigate risk and to find opportunities, Europe is by far the most developed and diverse ESG market. But what is the ESG investing scenario in India? Can you make money by ESG investing in India? To understand that, I'm joined by Abhay Laijawala, Managing Director and Fund Manager, Avendus Capital Private Markets Alternative Strategies. Hi, Abhay. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nasreen. Thank you very much for having me on this show.
So, Abhay, there's a lot of conversation about responsible investing and ESG. Since you've been involved with the ESG funds for some time in India, so could you take us through how big is the ESG market in India in both terms of opportunities and in size?
So, excellent question. But to give you a perspective on India, let me just give you a very quick perspective on what's happening globally on ESG. And then, you know, I'll give you a sense on India. ESG as a style of investing has been becoming more and more popular over the past few years. But in 2020, we saw an exceptional year for ESG funds, which attracted record inflows. So the point I'm trying to make is that more and more investors around the world are now embracing ESG. And consequently, this is now beginning to come to India. So while ESG is very nascent to India, India will have to hit the ground running on ESG. So it's very encouraging to see that in the last 2 years, we have seen, I think, almost 5 to 6 ESG funds come up across the AIF, BMS, and the mutual fund platforms. So today, I think we have 4 or 5 on the mutual fund platforms. We, who are, you know, the first ESG fund, came up on the AIF platform and now have a PMS product. So totally, I think the assets under management still very, very low. I would think that total assets under management in ESG stand only at around, I think, around 5,000 to maybe around 6,000 crores. But I do think that these will grow substantially. So this is as far as India is concerned, but we should not lose sight of the fact that as more and more foreign institutional investors embrace the ESG style of investing, we are already beginning to see this style of investing reflect in investment behavior of many of the stocks that we see in India. So ESG in India is not just being driven by domestic institutional investors, but is already in full play because most of the large international investors are already investing under the ESG style of investing.
Right. But Abhay, as you also mentioned, that India is actually now catching up with the developed countries. Why is that India took so long to kind of realize that responsible investing should be part of somebody's, as an investor's portfolio? You know, if we are lacking behind in both in terms of funds, also in terms of years. If you look at the European funds, they're a lot in number, in size, and also in interest. So what took so long for India to kind of catch up to this global phenomenon?
So a very good question. But here I would like to say it isn't just India which has lagged on ESG implementation and embracing the ESG style of investing. I think it was all of Asia. ESG was pioneered in Europe sometime around, it started, we had impact investing, which moved on to integrated investing sometime around 2007, 2008. And Europe really became a pioneer on ESG. And then you had the United States come in a little bit, but Asia had always lacked. I think what's really happened in the last few years is that more and more investors have looked at investing in ESG products. And I think all over the world, as climate change, income inequality, environmental related issues are becoming more and more prevalent, the entire investing universe is asking for investment products that are seen as sustainable. And as the awareness has increased on many of these ESG variables, as I mentioned, gender diversity, income disparities, climate change mitigation, governance, investors are beginning to look for products that have a sustainable footprint. In addition, what I would say has probably been a very big driver in Asia as well, is that variables such as climate change mitigation and the regulatory focus towards climate change mitigation has increased. For example, in India itself, we are beginning to see climate change related factors impact our daily lives. More and more Indian investors are now beginning to see that climate change is not, something that happens in academia. Everyone is seeing what's happening in terms of our excessive monsoons, the prevalence of cyclones in the Arabian Sea and in the Bay of Bengal. We are beginning to witness summers that are far, far hotter. So effectively, the realization that we need to mitigate climate change. In addition, over the last few years, as a result of Europe embracing ESG funds earlier on, investors are also beginning to see that ESG is not just a feel-good. ESG is a source of alpha generation. And there is no surprise in this, because what is good for the planet is also good for profits, and therefore it also becomes a variable for alpha generation. So a combination of these factors, i.e. awareness on environmental issues, the need to embrace gender diversity, income disparities, the expected move by regulators towards mitigating climate change, and more importantly, or rather, I would say most importantly, the fact that ESG is seen as a source of alpha generation have led to ESG, being embraced not only in all of Asia, but in India as well.
Right. So, Abhay, you almost preempted my question. The you know, there is a curiosity that can you make money while investing in EHT? Because, of course, it is impact investing. Also, you will consider a lot of issues like your corporate governance, how much is the carbon emission, and how much socially responsible the company is. So considering all the parameters, and these are very strict parameters. So considering all of this, if you can take us through what kind of returns ESG funds have given, at least in India, for the last 2-3 years. And also the question that, can you really make money in ESG funds?
This is a very good question, and I'm very happy that you asked. Because what I want to bring out over here is ESG is very different from impact investing. So while ESG originated from impact investing, the integrated style of ESG investing is, a source of alpha generation. And the difference between impact and integrated ESG is that in impact investing, you are investing solely with the objective of delivering an impact. Alpha generation is not a corollary objective. It may happen, it may not happen. But integrated ESG is all about delivering a sustainable impact while generating alpha. And, you know, let me tell you why that happens. That primarily happens because in the integrated ESG style of investing, you look at investing from a stakeholder perspective relative to just a shareholder perspective. So you're looking at a 360-degree perspective where you're looking at traditional financial parameters, but you're equally looking at the non-financial factors, such as governance, how a company interacts with society, with the regulator, how it treats employees, and most importantly, is it deemed to be resilient to the many disruptions that are going to come up in future? So all of this actually helps you to identify companies which are responsible and which are resilient to the risks. It also helps you find companies that are seeing the opportunities that are likely to come up over the next couple of years, because we are seeing that there is a lot of change that's happening in the world. So let me give you the experience of our own fund. We had started this fund in February of 19, and now we've moved from an AIF to a PMS. But in the time period that we've had so far, our fund has outperformed the benchmark Nifty index by almost 7%. And this gives us a lot of confidence that ESG not only works well in India, but is very much a source of alpha generation. Many of the other funds have come up far later than us. So we don't necessarily have a longer term track record, but we have seen that some of these ESG funds have generated alpha as well. So in our case, as I said, the alpha has been as much as 7%. And, in the 19 months since we've launched, or rather now it'll be almost 2 years since we've launched the fund, we've had a pandemic, we've had a massive rally, we had a time period during which the largest company in the Indian index almost doubled in value. That was a fossil fuel company, which we are not investing in. And despite those variables, if we have been able to generate alpha in our ESG fund, it gives us a lot of confidence that ESG investing is a source of alpha generation.
Right. After COVID, it's a global pandemic, which hit not only India, but all the global companies as well. Do you think in India particularly, fund managers and companies have become more have got reawakened to those ESG norms, or companies are getting realigned, they're realigning their business policies and strategies to be ESG compliant. How do you think is the ecosystem in India about the ESG investment and also for companies to be ESG compliant?
To be very honest, we were seeing the driving factors for ESG ecosystem in India beginning to build before the pandemic. And yes, since the pandemic, we are seeing some kind of an acceleration, but the system was beginning to come up very well. So let me just give you some examples. We already spoke about how we today have many funds, 5 to 8 different mutual funds, but the system is much more than just the funds. So the regulator, i.e. SEBI, has been making disclosures of non-financial information, i.e. disclosures and governance and other factors mandatory. They've now raised the disclosures to be made from 500 companies. They've now raised it to almost 1,000 companies. We are already beginning to see some homegrown ESG ranking providers, because up until these homegrown ESG ranking providers came, you only had the global ranking providers, i.e. MSCI and Sustainalytics. But now we have some homegrown ESG ranking providers come up as well. Even more importantly, I'm very encouraged to see that Indian industry associations like FICCI have formed ESG committees on how to help their members, i.e. Indian industry, become more ESG aware. And I happen to be on that committee, so I actually see the kind of progress and the kind of work that is being done over here. So all stakeholders, investors, regulators, corporates, and industry associations are beginning to come together. While a lot of work still needs to be done, the start is encouraging. And now what we should be expecting, and I hope that this happens, the Reserve Bank of India also needs to make climate disclosure risks mandatory for Indian banks. Because remember, India is one of the most climate vulnerable countries in the world. And it is imperative not only for the corporates, but the Indian banks to start disclosing climate-related risks. And I think, risks need to be measured, because you can only manage what you measure. So we do hope that, RBI also comes in, as SEBI has, as corporates have. We would like to see the ESG funds in the country, the mutual funds, the AIFs, all the ESG investing funds, we need to disclose their carbon footprint as well. Because investors who are investing in ESG need that transparency. Because if India is such a climate vulnerable country, investors need to know the carbon profile of the mutual funds that they are investing. So we do hope that, as the ESG system evolves, the RBI comes in, as I mentioned, and the ESG funds start to increase the transparency levels on what ESG means and what is the philosophy of how they are incorporating and integrating the ESG factors.
That's very interesting thought, Abhay. And I hope RBI would be listening and making some regulatory changes with climate change transparency with the banks. But if I have to shift focus to the Indian companies, you have been working on the fund closely with the companies at least for the last 2 years. So how do you see Indian companies being rated on the ESG parameters, how good or bad they are, and where are the gaps?
It's very, very interesting. Around 2 years ago, when we launched our ESG fund, when we pioneered ESG investing in India, you know, companies were not as ESG aware. And when we used to speak to many of these companies, they used to, you know, not necessarily highlight the importance of many of these ESG variables. But in the last two, of course, the larger companies were, but, you know, that was just the very large companies. And in many cases, most of the multinational companies who were embracing, you know, the ESG philosophies of their global parents. And there were certain Indian, large Indian companies which were doing it. But what we are beginning to see in the last 2 years is that the ESG awareness is increasing across the capitalization curve. The larger companies want to increase the level of transparency, the levels of non-financial disclosures. But it's very encouraging to see that many of the mid-cap companies too want to disclose this information. Now, this makes it a virtuous cycle where companies disclose more. Investors then, you know, invest in companies which are seen as ranking high on sustainability and ESG parameters. So I think this is beginning to increase. What I would also like to say, however, that ideally we would like to see more disclosures. So while the disclosures around governance factors are excellent in India, and I think full credit here to the regulator, we do need to see more disclosures on social parameters, on gender diversity, on what companies are doing to improve gender diversity. And we also need to see more disclosures on carbon emissions. And I think this is extremely relevant because the entire world, including India, is going to be signing on to net zero pledges. And India, being a climate vulnerable nation, you know, will need to address this. And I am very confident that India is probably going to announce a net zero, to go net zero, a pledge to go net zero well before the deadline of 2050. So clearly, you know, when this announcement is made, there will be a scramble by investors to, you know, gauge which companies are going to be impacted, because the move to net zero will involve, you know, a lot of action. So therefore, disclosures on carbon footprints, carbon emissions, carbon intensity, and how the companies plan to bring down their carbon emissions and intensity will become a determining factor in company valuations.
Of course, disclosures and transparency is one of the, you know, are two backbones of the responsible investment in the world. But as you spoke about carbon emission footprint, reducing the carbon footprint, I want you to throw some light on what is the decarbonization market in India, and it's a very complex. It's a complex theme for investors to understand who are very nascent stage investors. So if you could throw some light on decarbonization.
Yeah, decarbonization world over, and I'll come to India in a bit, world over is slated to be the largest commercial and investment opportunity of this century. And I'm not just making big statements. I am basing it on fact. Our estimate, and this is based on the analysis from data from the International Energy Association and various other reports, including the Task Force on Climate Disclosures, leads us to believe that the total size of the decarbonization opportunity globally is as much as 80 to 100 trillion, and I repeat, 80 to 100 trillion US dollars. And this includes the entire gamut of decarbonization including renewable energy, batteries, hydrogen, carbon capture, etc. Coming specifically to India, the entire world is looking at India's decarbonization opportunity. Because if India has to commit to these net zero targets, and we think that India will make a commitment to achieve these well before the 2050 deadline, India's decarbonization opportunity, which includes, again, renewables, battery storage, electric vehicles, hydrogen, and carbon capture, will be massive and off a global scale. In fact, just one area of decarbonization in India, i.e. renewables, will need to deploy more than $500 billion of investments to reach its 450 gigawatt capacity target by 2030. And this is an estimate by the Institute of Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. Another body, the International Energy Association, estimates that for each product, each vertical that I just spoke about, India represents a sizable share of the global market. So the IEA estimates that India alone will be 10% of the global market for lithium-ion batteries, 15% for wind turbines, and 30% for solar energy. I repeat, this is India's share of the global market. 10% for lithium, 15% for wind turbines, and 30% for solar. And the IEA therefore estimates that over the next few years, next decade or so, one in every $7 spent on these three types of equipment will be in India, compared with one in 20 today, illustrating the scale of opportunity.
That's a huge opportunity that you just mentioned, Abhay. And I'm afraid we are actually running out of time. That's all from our side today. Thanks a lot, Abhay, for giving those insights, very interesting, deep thoughts. And thanks once again for giving us your time.
Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to speak about ESG and sustainability, which we remain at Avendus very passionate about. Thank you very much.
Thank you. For feedback, you can write to me at nasreen.s@lifemint.com, or you can reach out to me on Twitter at nasreenstory. You can also reach out to us at HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And to listen to more podcasts like this, you need to log on to www.htsmartcast.com.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.